Conditions of suffering, may not undergo that may be vyakyatum arasi. Please describe. Translation of greatest portion of the Sukadeva Goswami, now kindly tell me how human beings would be saved from having to enter hellish conditions in which they suffer terrible pains. Therefore, in the 26th chapter of the 5th canto, Sukadeva Goswami explained that people who commit sinful acts are forced to enter hellish planets and suffer. Now, Maharaj agrees, being a devotee, is concerned about how this can be stopped. A Vaishnava is part of the dukkhi, in other words, he has no personal troubles, but he's very unhappy to see others in trouble. Prabhupada Maharaj said, "My Lord, I have no personal problems, for I have learned how to glorify your transcendental qualities, and thus enter a trance of ecstasy. I do have a problem, however, for I am simply thinking of these rascals and fools who are busy with my asura, temporary happiness without knowledge of devotional service unto you. This is the problem faced by a Vaishnava. Because of Vaishnava fully takes shelter of the Supreme Personality of God, he personally has no problem, but because he is compassionate towards the fallen conditioned souls, he is always thinking of plans to save them from the hellish life in his body or the next. Parikshita Maharaj, therefore, anxiously wanted to know from Sukadeva Goswami how humanity can be saved from gliding down to hell. Sukadeva Goswami has already explained how people enter hellish life, and he could also explain how they could be saved from it. Intelligent men must take advantage of these instructions. Unfortunately, however, the entire world is lacking in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, people are suffering from the growth of ignorance and do not even believe in life after this one. To convince them of their next life is very difficult because they have become almost mad in their pursuit of material enjoyment. Nonetheless, our duty, the duty of all sane men, is to save them. Maharaj Parikshit is the representative of one who can save them. Translation of great fortune often Sukadeva Goswami now kindly tell me how human beings may be saved from having to enter hellish conditions in which they suffer terrible pains. So in the previous canto, Sukadeva described the various places one can go. Some of the places are filled with pleasure. We have Svarga Loka, we have Boma Svarga, and we have Vila Svarga, the planets below the earth. So there's places for enjoyment with a minimum of suffering. Of course, in these places, there is not absolute absence of suffering because there is finally death. So even on Brahma Loka, death occurs. So that itself is a form of suffering. And there are other places which are not Svarga Loka, such as Bharatvarsha, where there's a mixture of happiness and distress. And there is the hellish planet below the Bhumandala, that is Naraka or Pitraloka, where Yamaraj punishes the very sinful people. That was described by Sukadeva Goswami also. All of this is a result of actions of jivas by which they get karma to put them in different bodies in different places within the universe. And there they enjoy and suffer according to their previous actions. So of these we have the persons who suffer the most, those in the hellish planets. So this is the question that Parikshit asked: how can these persons who are suffering so greatly in hell get rid of that suffering? So, of course, one method, of course, is the method of karma itself. If we follow the process of dharma, that allows us to do punyas, avoid papa, and therefore avoid such punishments. And once we get the punishment, of course, we have to experience it, and after it's over, and then we get another chance. Of course, we may take an animal body for some time, and then later on we get a human body, and again we get a chance to perform proper activities. So this idea of papa and punya is one way in which, if we understand this, then we can avoid this position. Generally, however, once the karma has started, it is very difficult to avoid. Yeah, so generally it is said that prarabdha karmas must be enjoyed or suffered, and we cannot get rid of them. To some degree, of course, there is an exception to that, because we say that bhakti destroys all karmas, even the prarabdha karmas. But then there's a conflict with other shrutis to say that prarabdha karmas must be experienced. So, the way of resolving this, of course, is to say that certainly the karmas are altered. The prarabdha karmas are altered for one who surrenders to the Lord. And therefore one does not experience the same karmas. Or there's a lesser amount of intensity of the karma. At the same time, if all karmas were removed, then the person would disappear because his body is karma. So that he wouldn't live anymore. He'd suddenly disappear when he surrenders to the Lord. So that would mean there'd be no devotees left on earth. They'd all disappear. So then the question arises, well, how can there be any propagation of bhakti if all the devotees immediately disappear once they surrender to the Lord? So the answer is the Lord continues with that pattern of prarabdha karma by which their life goes on. It's extended to their lifespan at least, so that they can spread the teachings of the Lord. So that much karma goes on, at least. But even that karma is not really karma, because it's under the Supreme Lord. And if the Lord wants, he can just dissolve that also. In which he does. He does that sometime also. If the person is eager for the Lord and the Lord is eager for the devotee, then he makes this exceptional case and the devotee does disappear when he surrenders to the Lord. And he ends up in the spiritual world. So, that is the case with bhakti. Then we have the people in hellish conditions. What do they do? Because there's no preaching down there, really. They're all suffering in these hellish places. Of course, Yamaraj is a devotee, but he simply inflicts different punishments according to the rule, the orders given. According to the acts, you get this sort of punishment. That was described in the fifth canto. But generally, there's no way of avoiding that. Now, of course, we do have, in Dharma itself, we have some prescriptions. That is, Shraddha rites for the dead. And by these rites, one is supposed to relieve the person of those hellish sufferings. 11-day Shraddha rites are there to gradually get the person out of that particular suffering in a hellish place. So that is one method within Dharma itself to help relieve a person of his hellish suffering. Of course, the other way is that though the person deserves the punishment, he may not get it at all. And that is the case of Ajamil. And his case was, he didn't even perform bhakti at all. He simply named his son Narayana. And that was enough to cancel out all the future karmas completely. It is said, of course, that also his present karmas were also cancelled out, but a pattern remained by the will of the Lord. And all his future karmas, that is what the acts he was doing in this life, were cancelled out. And therefore, though he did sinful acts, Yamadutas could not punish him for that. So he was in a very special case. But it is not uncommon, because he simply uttered the name of the Supreme Lord. And that effect happened. All the karmas were destroyed. Now, so this is not an exceptional case. It is an ordinary case, or a general rule. And that is why we say that one of the offenses of the Holy Name is to think that the glories of the Holy Name are an exaggeration. So if we think they don't happen all the time, maybe in a few rare cases the power of the Holy Name acts, but in most cases it doesn't, then that is considered offensive. So the general rule is that yes, chanting the Holy Name of the Lord once accidentally, even that, destroys all your karmas. Which sounds impossible, but that's what he's said in the scriptures, and that is the example in the story of Ajamil. All his karmas were destroyed. So that is another way in which, even without bhakti, one can avoid the sufferings in hell, in spite of the fact one does deserve them. So one can avoid. However, the condition for that is that we do not do sinful activities and then chant the name of the Lord in order to avoid the punishment. Then it becomes committing sinful activities in the strength of the Holy Name. So therefore, one has to be careful of this particular principle. This is a principle for ignorant people, and they accidentally chant the name of the Lord. And so they get relief from their hellish punishment this way. This does not, of course, give them bhakti directly. It gives them another chance to avoid suffering and to live in the material world without that hellish punishment, that's all. And they may do pop or punya again and get the same thing again in the future. So it's not guaranteed that this is going to develop into bhakti. However, in the case of Ajamil, we see that he was fortunate because he listened to the conversation of the Yamadutas and Vishnudutas, and he became educated by that. So he came back to life because of the his lifespan actually was more than that particular period, and then he became a devotee of the Lord, and he practiced very sincerely, and then as a result of that, he finally went to Vaikuntha. So that's the case where his accidental chanting later developed into sincere bhakti, and that became prema eventually, and then he was qualified for the spiritual world. So the way of avoiding hell, of course, is we can do temporary measures when the sutta rites or something like that, so a person doesn't have to suffer so much. That also does not guarantee in the future he won't again come back and then commit some of our sins and then go to hell again. It doesn't guarantee anything. And it also does not keep him out of the material world. He has to take another birth. Even if you do so many sutta rites, the person has to take birth again in the material world. It doesn't stop that process. So therefore, the chances are always there of ending up sometime in the future with the hellish existence again. And as long as we're doing punya, is fine. But then we drop from that position and we come back to Varsha and we act as a human being, and then there's a possibility again we can do sins instead of punyas. And that way we could also go to hell again. So simply following Dharma is not always a guarantee we can avoid hellish punishment, because we could deviate at some point from Dharma and then end up with a hellish result. So there's no guarantee that we're always going to get the good results and do punyas by following Dharma. Sometimes we may also have to suffer in hellish existence. So generally, the system is there to avoid that. But there is chances one could fall from that position. So we see the case of Achamil himself. He was within the Varnashram system. He was a Brahmin. He was educated nicely by his father. Then he became sinful. So he had to suffer. So that the system was no guarantee he could avoid committing sin. It was, of course, a general principle. Yes, it's a safeguard, but it's not absolute. So it was not the strongest method of avoiding hellish punishment. So in general, of course, it helps to follow the principles of Dharma, but we see in the case of Achamil, still, he was almost ready to suffer. But he was saved by the Supreme Lord in the form of his name. So this is a higher principle. Anything associated with the Lord is absolute. So all things associated with the Lord, the name of the Lord, is considered the most potent and powerful. And so for that reason, when he accidentally chanted the name, it had effect. So, if accidental association with the Lord's name produces this effect, how much more power will intentional, devotional chanting of the name have? Much more effect. So, the destroying these hellish punishments and karmas, etc., is a byproduct. It's not even the main goal of one who chants sincerely, but it also happens for him. But more than that, the person eventually develops prema and is qualified for spiritual world. So that is the main result for the devotee. He's not even interested in whether he goes to hell or heaven or whatever. So therefore the final solution to avoid these hellish punishments is not dharma, but bhakti. And in bhakti, the easiest way or easiest approach is through the name of the Lord. And that's illustrated by the story of
I mean, I understand that because of the intense karma in the previous life, one is supposed to commit sins like in the previous life.
No. If karmas make us do activities, then that's a perpetual trap. And then we're not responsible. Karma's responsible. But karma is not sentient. It has no free will of its own. Karma cannot say, do this, because it has no will. It has no consciousness to make us do anything. Karmas are, of course, we can say they are circumstances we're put in. So due to one circumstance, we're put in Svarga Loka, another position we're put in Earth, another position we're put in Bila Svarga, in a lower planet, like that. That's the situation. But that does not decide how we act. We decide how we act in the situation. And so if we're in Svarga, then we may choose innocent collectivity there. Huh? We shouldn't, but then we may also. And then we fall from that position, just as Indra chose to fight with Krishna or do whatever, huh? And oppose him when he took the Parijat flower, or oppose him when he told the inhabitants of Vrindavan to stop the sacrifice of Indra. So a person in Svarga Loka may also, in spite of the fact that his position is good, choose the wrong thing. So the karma is greater situation. They also, of course, create our general sense of gunas and desires and whatever carry over from previous life. They produce our place where we are born. They produce our body. But still, the jiva is the one who decides how to act. It's not the karma deciding anything. It's not the place deciding anything. It's not the body deciding. The body doesn't decide anything. They may influence, but they never decide anything. It is the jiva who is the actual doer in the body, not the body. Of course, behind that is the Supreme Lord. But in any case, it is the jiva who is the karta, or the doer, and the experiencer, the bhokta. So he always has his choice in any condition. And therefore he gets karma. If he doesn't have choice, then there's no karma. So a young child doesn't get karma because they don't really choose. The kids are not discriminating. Or animals don't get karma because they can also not choose. But human beings who are adult, yes, they have the ability to choose, and therefore they get karma.
Could
have
avoided that particular
sight. Yeah, but he didn't.
But the situation was because of his karma. Because daily he was going to the forest, but particular day he saw something which he should not have seen.
Yeah. Well, of course, one is, once he saw it, he could have just avoided it. Choice one way or the other. So we can say a mixture of gunas is there in a person there, and even a Brahmin who's not pure sattva is a mixture of tamagun and rajagun, and sometimes tamagun will manifest and sometimes rajagun will manifest. And if so, then he may commit a sinful act. So we can't say Brahmins are all pure because they may commit sins also.
Well, in case of some accident take place due to karma, so that is how this
Yeah, that's karma. There's no decision to have an accident. But that's the karma. Those are situations we're put into. So that's karma. So situations are there. We're born in a situation, a certain family, certain place, certain country, certain time. That's karma. We have certain incidents in life which we cannot avoid no matter what we do. Those are karmas. But nevertheless, we do act and produce situations. That is not karma. In other words, we work and we get money. That's not karma. It's not a result of karma that I'm going to get money if I just sit there. If I work, then I get the money. If I don't, then I don't get the money. So certain things we do in this life are a result of our actions now, depending on our decisions. And if a man kills another person, it's not my karma to kill him. It's a decision.
In case of Ajamila, he was not a devotee when he committed this activity. What about devotees when they're chanting holy name? Somehow they commit a sinful activity.
Well, Krishna says, Abhijetsudra, even if he commits some sinful activity, yes, he's my devotee. But after he commits a sinful activity, he has to continue his bhakti, which means, again, he doesn't do the sinful act. Of course, that's also there. But still, it's a material world, so he may fall from his position even as a devotee. And we have many examples of that also.
How do we draw a line between karma, sinful activity, and
aparas? Oh, aparas are in relation to devotees and Supreme Lord and bhakti. And sinful activities in relation to living entities in general. That's the main distinction. So when a sinful activity is directed towards the Lord and the devotees, then it becomes aparad. When it's directed towards others, then it becomes sin. So aparada is double. It's also sinful activity. It's also sin against Krishna or the devotees or bhakti. So then it has double effect.
Which means the devotee will never have to see hell. Devotee will not have to see hell anytime.
Huh?
He won't be able to go into hell anytime.
Generally, no. Of course, it says that if he commits sins on the strength of holy name, then he goes to hell.
Nantra Krishna Bhagavad Ki
Jai.
Nantra Bhagavad Ki
Jai.
Nantra Bhagavad Ki
Jai.
Nantra Bhagavad Ki
Jai.
Thank you.
I think we're going to be able to do it.